This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
your award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
Right now is one of the most important times in the 26-year history of Joy. Times are tough financially, but that will never stop us delivering powerful, meaningful and uplifting radio for you. To get ready for the future, we're launching Joy Nation and we need your support to do it. So help Joy by asking your workmates, your next door neighbour, your mum, your dad, your siblings and of course your friends. Go to joy.org.au and make a donation to build Joy Nation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
This is a reprise edition of Saturday Magazine, and now we're going to listen from Nick Demopoulos himself.
Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9. You are listening to Macca and Tass.
Thank you, Macca. Macca, we're going to speak with Nick Demopoulos. Nick Demopoulos is a young man whose name is very well known in our community. A lot has been spoken about him, a lot has been said about him, both in the media and in private rooms all over the nation, really. We have spoken to the police commissioner, we've spoken to the commissioner for gender and sexuality, we've spoken to the minister for equality, we've spoken to Nick's lawyer, we've also spoken to IBAC, and now we have the privilege of actually speaking with Nick himself. Good morning to you, Nick.
Hi, good morning. How you going?
Very well, thank you, Nick, and it's great to have you on the airwaves, and I really thank you for making time available to speak with us this morning.
Yeah, for sure.
Nick, we're aware of what happened to you on the night of the raid, and we've heard a lot about the harm that's been caused to you, but before we proceed any further, how are you feeling? How are you now?
Yeah, look, I'm doing okay. I'm better. Like, even before this pandemic, I feel like I've been, socially distancing myself and in lockdown for a whole year. I mean, that's just how my life has been since then. And, you know, still going. So, each day my focus and priority really is about my recovery. I'm pretty much used to what everyone's going through at the moment, but it's been a longer process. Still is.
We really thank you for making time available to speak with us this morning. As I said, we've talked a lot about you, and to actually be able to speak with you this morning is actually a real privilege. Nick, tell us what happened on the night of the police raid. What did you think was going on that night?
I've been living above Hare's Lane bookshop for over 7 years. But on that particular night, which was around 2 a.m., I was woken up by our dog, which was growling continuously. Initially, I thought it was just like a possum in the courtyard, which is something that used to happen quite often. But shortly after, I could hear some strange voices downstairs in the courtyard, which sounded like intruders. As soon as they got to the top of the stairs, they entered, and I could see were these sort of dark silhouettes of men pointing torches at me. And then I heard one yell out, Derry's, get him. So immediately, I was terrified, and so I ran downstairs to the front door of the shop. But they were running after me and caught up to me as I was trying to unlock the door to get out. Then they carried me face down into the gutter, where they continued to restrain me, forced me down, then cable tied my hands behind my back. During the struggle, they broke my right arm in multiple places, plus ripped the shoulder out of my socket. At no time did anyone identify themselves or communicate anything to me. So all I could process in my head was that this was, a hate crime. They were intruders who had targeted an LGBTQI business and broke in with the intention to lynch or assault everyone in there. I mean, that's all I could process in my head. While I was pushed down the gutter, I remember at one point seeing in the corner of my eye a pair of boots with the tip of a rifle gun. So psychologically, I was preparing myself to be shot and killed. I mean, that memories will never go away. It's intense. It wasn't until I heard one of the owners of the Bookshop Crusade trying to identify me to these people when I realised I might be safe. But at that stage, I was in so much pain and agony and shock that all I wanted, you know, was an ambulance. And it wasn't until after my surgery, days after my surgery, where I actually found out what happened, that it was, you know, the CERT team officers conducting the raid, that they were on a chase of an armed, what I heard was a Lebanese gang member driving a stolen vehicle, which just happened to abandon in the laneway behind his and his bookshop. So it was just a case of, you know, wrong place, wrong time, wrong identity, but, you know, very wrongly accused and very wrongly assaulted. So, you know, that's you know, what happened on that night.
Nick, it's Macca, and I can't express how what you've described to me makes me feel. It happened to you. Just hearing what happened, you know, is incredibly frightening.
Yeah.
So when you said, you know, when they came in and the torches and stuff, did they identify themselves as police officers?
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know what to say to that, Tass and Nick. You know, look, we've got a number of things we want to talk about, and you know, perhaps before the end of the show, I'll make a comment on that. How did you feel? I mean, you've given us some feeling about how it felt. You know, your reaction there was fear, seeing boots and guns close to your face and being held down on the ground.
How did you feel? What was your reaction?
I mean, it was terror. I mean, that's the only way I could remember it. Absolute terror. And the only thing that was going through my mind was, this is it. You know, this is the end, you know. And of course, I couldn't help but, you know, feel that this was a direct intrusion or something pre-planned, you know, because they didn't identify themselves. That's all I had to go by, you know. It's terror is the only way I could describe it, and the preparation of actually, you know, being killed.
I can't imagine what that would feel like myself.
No,
it's still you know, resonates in my head, you know, constantly. It's awful.
So, Nick, you know, you were very badly hurt. You required urgent medical care and, in fact, surgery. Look, based on what we've read, and, you know, I've spoken to a number of medical practitioners and specialists about this, and all of them, when they are aware and have seen x-rays of the injury, are appalled. Now, I know that, you know, you're getting a lot of assistance and this, but in terms of the mental health, that is a big challenge. We understand that, and I think it's important, you know, that, you know, our community stands with you on this. The physical health, there's still a very, very long way to go, isn't there? Tell us about the next steps there.
Yeah. Well, look, according to my surgeon, who is like a renowned to be one of the best, like in shoulder construction, on the actual night that I was brought in into emergency, said, you know, it was the worst shoulder injury he'd actually ever seen, quote unquote. During emergency, I was told that there was so much damage that he wasn't confident he could fix it, and that it possibly was unrepairable. You know, a year later, I've undergone two major reconstruction surgeries, including a hip graft, which is basically part of my hip bone being removed and attached to my shoulder to create like a bridge in the socket to help it keep it together. There's also a lot of metal plates, wires, screws in my arms and shoulders, plus an enormous scar and muscle dystrophy, which I still to this day can't look at. I still literally have not seen my arm. I always cover it clothing, I look away, I cover it in a towel when I'm showering. So it's just, I'm not ready to see it. I mean, I could notice how I look wearing clothes, but I just can't look at the actual wound itself. After my second operation, I was put into rehab because I physically, mentally wasn't coping at all. It was a, you know, I was in a really bad state. So that's when I sort of had to start put on some anti-anxiety medication and antidepressant. And it wasn't until months later I started having to start some daily physiotherapy and also weekly trauma therapy and also monthly I was visiting a psychiatrist, which I still all to this day continue doing. And it's also quite indefinite that I'm on these antidepressants for trauma and anxiety. Just only recently I started to get some low-level strength back in my arm, and that's been almost a year of, you know, since, you know, the incident. But the range is still very poor. It hasn't really improved much since around September. It just doesn't reach high enough. It may require more surgery. I'm still in the process of working that out with my surgeon. Also experience daily heavy fatigue. If I do anything productive or use physical stamina, I get so tired and most of the time I end up sleeping. It's, you know, really non-productive, very frustrating. And like prior to this, I was extremely productive, workaholic, you know, because I loved so much what I did. And it's just it's so hard to get used to that. More than anything, actually, it's just productivity is deflated. It's, terrible.
Nick, I have to tell you that our screen has just gone off. Many messages coming in. You know, messages of support, messages of gratitude that you're sharing your story, messages of love. I just want you to know that. And just in the last...
Oh, yeah, I'm actually aware of that, and I've been getting this, and I'm very, very lucky to be getting such support and having a voice in this, actually. And it means so much. But, you know, like I said, all I've been able to do is just focus on the healing and the rehabilitation. It's really quite hard for me to look outside. I mean, I make a point not to watch or read too much, or I didn't watch the 60 Minutes show because it's sort of hard to absorb it all. But I'm aware of it completely, you know, and that's the main thing. Fantastic.
Nick, when you look back at what's occurred, do you feel you've been treated fairly? Have you received justice, or perhaps justice is the journey that continues for you?
Yeah, the quick answer is absolutely not. I had to first, like, patiently wait for IBAC to complete their investigation, which took quite a while, and then releasing their findings, which pretty much was that the CERT officers did not do anything wrong or unlawful, which is crazy, and so no officers were charged. According to IBAC, the entrance without warrant was lawful. Also, they said there was no factual findings proving that the officers failed to identify themselves or to communicate who they were, so it's basically my word against theirs. Just so you know, by law, police have to identify themselves when entering and confronting a suspect. They also have to communicate an arrest and also even communicate, like, an official release. So none of this happened. And so how they can't be charged with that, I don't understand. IBAC found that the level of excessive force was reasonable and appropriate, which, you know, obviously infuriates me. Because of IBAC's, you know, frankly useless findings, I'm taking all legal actions to pursue justice myself, so that these officers can be made accountable and criminally charged for not only, you know, breaking my arm and shoulders, but I believe breaking the law, you know.
I mean, IBAC...
And don't forget the trauma as well.
I mean, IBAC wasn't there.
Oh, completely.
You were there, Nick. and you know you've told your story. Sorry, Tess.
Nick, I was just going to say, your experience, your story has generated a lot of interest in our community, as is evidenced by the feedback that we're getting on our computer just here this morning. As I said in the introduction, we have spoken to the police commissioner, we've spoken to the gender and sexuality commissioner, we've spoken to Martin Foley, the Minister for Equality, your lawyer, and to IBAC. And I don't expect that you've heard those interviews, but all of us have tried to tell us that this was not motivated by homophobia. What do you have to say about that?
Well, what happened to me was not a direct homophobic hate crime per se. What motivated my fear on the night to run was seeing a group of intruders wearing dark clothing and in the dark shining torches at me. This to me looked like a lynch or an intention to harm or assault me. There's like an instinct or a deep kind of rooted fear we all share in the LGBTQIA plus community because of our history of oppression, discrimination, but also attacks, assaults, murders, just because of our sexual and gender preference. And our difference is that we have this inherited trauma, knowing that we can very easily be target of a hate crime. So, yes, when, you know, my action to run for my life, once the intruders with torches yelled out, "There he is, get him," I only had split seconds to react to this. And without any communication, I keep repeating that, no communication, no identification of who they were, what else am I supposed to do? How else am I supposed to read the situation? And furthermore, you know, with them escalating this into a chase and then to an assault, again, with no communication, felt like I was being, at the time, lynched or definitely involved in a hate crime. That's all I could process in my head. So that's as far as I can explain it as a hate crime.
What messages do you have for the police who did this to you, Nick?
Well, that I will seek justice, that you'll be made accountable and hopefully removed from your job. That's simple. I mean, this particular unit have been involved in many other botched raids. They do have a terrible record of unlawful and excessive force that have left people brutally injured, like myself. You know, let's call them what they are. They're, you know, these are bad cops and they have to go. Not only, you know, do we need police reform, but also to remove the core problem, which are these incompetent cops or, you know, thugs, I call them. Otherwise, you know, it will keep happening. And I say this as a warning to people. Remember, I was just sleeping in my bed before I got assaulted. It's an enormous stuff up on their side. And so far, they've assumed they've got away with it. And that doesn't sit well with me at all.
The police claim it was a case of mistaken identity. I say it's a case of the mistaken use of force and overuse of force in a situation. Can I just say, Nick, the IBAC, you know, when we had IBAC on and I listened to that, I was actually driving. I wasn't in the studio that day. But I was listening.
I didn't hear it, unfortunately.
Well, you know, listen if you're able to what they said, but I understand if you don't want to. But what I took out of that interview, which was done by colleagues here, to me the key point in the IBAC report is that they said, you know, and you touched on that yourself, you know, the assumption on the part of IBAC that the police did identify themselves, right? So why was not the, you know, when you said no, they didn't, and the police said yes, they did, why is the assumption that the person who was attacked and had their arm ripped out of their socket in the gutter of Johnson Street, why was the assumption by IBAC that you were lying? And, you know, the whole judgment of IBAC basically swings on that. Because if the police said they announced themselves as police, you say they didn't. IBAC says what follows that was reasonable force. I say I do not accept IBAC's assessment. I think IBAC is wrong in law. I'm not the only one who says that. It actually disgusts me
Yeah.
But I understand the terror that you felt, the violence that you endured.
Yeah.
I hope that you are able, over the next while, not just get justice, but to get to a position where, as much as you can resume normal life. What do you say to members of our community, Nick? What is the message you have for them?
I mean, we still live in an environment where, this can happen. I mean, look what's happening in America, globe at the moment with Black Lives Matter and police corruption and crime. That just because this was filmed, that we now can see for ourselves the injustice of what actually is actually happening. We're not as safe as we think. Going back to the statement of IBAC, I absolutely agree with you 100% that even if I was the person that they were chasing, they as a human being should not be treated in that manner. Also, why on earth would I run away from police? If I knew they were police, yes. Why on earth would I run away?
Exactly.
Why would I have escalated this to the level that it was? Why, at the point that I'm being tortured, literally tortured, still not being told what's going on? It amazes me. But look, I'll have my time in court where I can explain why I needed to run. Had they announced themselves from the start, let alone not even saying anything during all the other stages, including at the stage where they were releasing me from the arrest, not communicating anything, how that could be justified and that could be okay. So, going back to, what message for the community? Well, there is an issue with what's happening, obviously, with Black Lives Matter. There is an interesting push that's happening, awareness for the more vulnerable parts of our group, which is trans black lives, which I think needs to be really focused on at the moment. And all the injustices that are coming out at the moment, and this is a really good time where everyone's talking about it, that we need to kind of shift whether it's pride or whether it's our fight actually is for more the vulnerable parts of our community, as opposed to
Nick,
just a celebration of our freedom and our
Nick, you've talked to us about suing the police and having your day in court and being able to pursue this and you want to get justice. We've heard that. My final question to you is, what are you doing to look after yourself and take care of yourself as you work your way through recovery through this whole process?
Pretty much the same what I've been doing all year. It really is a day-by-day project where it's almost like 3 or 4 hours sometimes of a lot of the physio. I do keep busy in my room and being able to start creating things again with the limited use I have of my arm. But this sort of constant fatigue is just really difficult, and the pain that I literally feel is a constant reminder. I'm good at staying positive. I mean, through therapy, it's been extraordinary, and that continues. I've always been a very positive person prior to all this, and so that person sort of slowly kicking back. But it's just hard to ignore what's vividly in front of me and what I feel every day. And look, it's really hard to get closure on this until I have received some justice and to know that justice has been served. And this is what's fueling my my anger and also my persistence in pursuing this to the end. it's been also incredible what's been happening at the moment with all this with the media having such a focus on police corruption and crime. If anything, that's as much as it's triggering watching all this, it's also quite empowering because you know it's really making me feel like, great, you know, this is finally becoming a conversation. It's so sad that it has to wait until it's so publicly filmed for people to know what's happening and to have empathy towards it. So it's a really good time, but that's just really fueling me more to pursue justice.
Thank you, Nick.
Unfortunately, we're out of time, but I want to say thank you for your courage.
Thank you.
I feel very emotional about this. I would surrender every single gain almost we've made in the last 40-odd years that I've been fighting for what happened to have not happened to you.
Thanks for that.
Thank you for your courage. Stay the course, mm-hmm. Nick. You'll have my support and many others.
And thank you for telling your story
and feel free to
so openly.
To talk to us on air, to share your story with our community at any time. All I can say to you, Nick, is thank you and thanks for your courage.
Thank you for everyone and everyone's support. Actually, it's been incredible. As much as I'm hiding in my room, I'm aware that is all there and I feel so supported and backed up with that. So that's all part of what's driving me to take this to that next level. So thank you for that.
Thanks, Nick. Strength to you, Nick.
Yeah.
Strength to you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
That was Nick Demopoulos. That was a very powerful and a very emotional interview. I know Macca's quite moved. We're all quite moved by that.
I don't accept the IBAC assessment. I'm sorry. IBAC, you got it wrong. You got it very wrong. You've absolutely fucked with someone's life and it's not acceptable. It's not acceptable.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.